Shining Threads, written by Audrey Howard and read by Carol Boyd.
Chapter 1. She was like a young queen in her hauteur. The warm honey of her skin, the pale cat-like grey of her eyes, the sweeping burnished darkness of her hair which flowed unconfined down the length of her straight back, promised a stunning beauty to come. She had on a white cambric shirt, frilled down its front, with full sleeves which were caught in a narrow band at the wrist, and amazingly pale buff riding breeches of the finest doeskin. Her knee-high boots were brown and of the very best leather, polished until they gleamed, and she wore brown kid gloves and carried a riding crop. Had it not been for her hair and the knot of scarlet ribbon with which it was carelessly tied back, she might have been taken for a boy. She sat astride her small chestnut mare with the regal grace which spoke of generations of majesty, of the divine right to rule stretching back into eternity, and yet her grandfather had been no more than a humble handloom weaver. Her two companions were as attractive as she, with the same magnificent seat in the saddle. Dark as gypsies, with eyes as blue as a cornflower with a touch of violet in them, they possessed the wide, laughing mouth which was so eternally female in her, but which in them was firmed into masculine arrogance. Their hair was thick and curling, tumbling in boyish disorder above fiercely swooping black brows. They were dressed just as she was, but where her breeches were buff, theirs were dove grey, clinging to their strong young thighs and buttocks. It was a bright and pretty day. The sky was a high, placid blue, and the sun fell in a brimming haze on the three young riders. They were laughing. Their heads were thrown back, their brown throats arched and smooth, and the noise they made disturbed a scatter of magpies. The birds scuttled about a stretch of tussocky grass for a moment, before lifting above the bracken and into the air, drifting away on almost motionless wings. The slight breeze was warm and soaked in the fragrance of heather and gorse. It moved the shadows cast along the track by the shoulder-high bracken and rippled through the hair of the riders. A curlew took flight in alarm, its liquid, bubbling song rising into the clear air, and the high-stepping, mettlesome mounts rolled their eyes and tossed their fine heads. Around their feet quarrelled a pack of dogs, tall and black with brown markings and no tail to speak of, glossy and well-muscled, and as healthy and vigorous as the youngsters and the horses they rode. "Do you think my mother believed you?" the girl said. Her voice still quivered with laughter as she spoke. She lifted her gloved hand to push back the heavy weight of hair from her forehead, an impatient gesture implying she would dearly love to be free of it, as she was free at this precise moment of every other female constraint which hampered girls of her age and obvious station in life.
"Lord, I don't know, but what could she do about it? It's not the first time we've made that excuse to Aunt Jenny, but short of sending a message to old Wilding to check that he had actually summoned us to the schoolroom, she was forced to accept our story. Anyway, what does it matter? We're out now, and it'll be worth the flogging we're bound to get from Charlie when they discover where we've been. And we did ride into the schoolyard and out again, so we're not lying when we say we've been there, are we?"
The boy who spoke grinned impishly.
"And by God, I would submit to half a dozen beatings to get away from that damned mill for an hour. We'll be there soon enough one day, I suppose, when we've done with lessons. But now we're on holiday, and I fail to see why we should be forced into the weaving shed. Don't you agree, brother?"
He turned to laugh in the direction of the second boy, and he might have been looking at his own reflection in a mirror. The same arrow straight back and broadening young shoulders, the same eyes and smiling mouth, firm white teeth and tenacious jaw, the same look of sleek and graceful high spirits, and it was plain that there was no more than a minute or two between them in age.
"But what did she say?" the girl demanded to know. "Oh, the usual stuff. She could quite believe our schoolmaster was not satisfied with our performance as scholars, and that we needed to do extra schoolwork to help keep up with the rest, but that in her opinion we were wasting our time and his."